Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Prospect Podcast. I'm Steve Bloomfield. The war in Syria is now 8 years old, longer than the Second World War, and shows no sign of ending. But the daily horror has slipped from the headlines. The current bombardment of Idlib by Syrian government and Russian forces has been ignored by too many of us. A new film by Wad al-Khatib will shake you out of any sense of apathy. Wad documented the siege of Aleppo in 2016. You might have seen her reports on Channel 4 News. Her film, Fosama, named after her daughter who was born during the war, details that siege and life in the hospital that Wad's husband, Hamza, set up. We'll be talking to Wad in a moment, but first I'm joined by Samir Rahim, our arts and books editor, who, like me, watched the film. Samir, before we talk about the film, perhaps if you could give us a bit of a précis of where we are with the war in Syria.
A lot of people thought recently that the war might be coming towards an end, and it's true that in about 60-70% of Syria, much of it has been retaken by the government, but there have been enclaves, quite large enclaves, which have been until recently quite independent. Idlib, which is one of the earliest places to launch the revolution, has been under constant bombardment recently from Russian planes, similar somewhat to the situation in Aleppo that the film we saw for summer is about. I saw a report in The Economist that the UN had given the coordinates of the hospitals and health centres to the Russian government to try and indicate to them where they shouldn't bomb. But in fact, as soon as they did that, the Russians started bombing them. So it's the same tactics, bombing hospitals. These are war crimes that are happening every day. And many people have been forced to flee again to the border and to Turkey, forced to leave their homes. So it is a pretty destructive event. But I think we might have Syria fatigue in some ways. It's somehow a conflict that's so complicated, people feel, or it's been dragging on so long, or they just want it to be over. And even now you have discussions about whether we should drop sanctions on Syria, give money for reconstruction, but really the war isn't over.
And it's funny, you say it's complicated, and yes, it is, but there's also something very simple about what's happening right now, which is Syrian and Russian forces are bombing hospitals, they're bombing civilians. That these are war crimes. There's nothing complicated about that.
That's true, and that echoes a Syrian friend of mine who said, yeah, you know, it is complicated, but also it is actually quite simple. There are innocent civilians there. Of course, they're rebels of various stripes, jihadists, until recently ISIS, and certainly remnants of ISIS are there. So that does complicate things. But we shouldn't be distracted by the fact that the Syrian government and its Russian allies have committed 90% of the atrocities in the country. And they are really the reason why people aren't returning there and don't want to.
This film, Fosama, is made by Wad al-Khatib, who was a correspondent for Channel 4 News. She was an assistant journalist originally and then started sending her reports to Channel 4 News and working with them. And they've also worked with her on this film. It's a horrible, horrible film to watch. It's horrific, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a film that has the most dead bodies that I think that I've ever seen. certain little images stay with me. I think the hospital floor covered with this blood, red blood, stays with me. And there's one scene in which a boy is brought in dead from an airstrike, and the mother comes in and just takes the child and goes out into the streets and starts, you know, wailing and screaming. And it is extremely powerful.
And the boy's brothers, yeah, as well, who bring him in. These two, I mean, they're 9, 10 years old, bringing in their younger brother who's just been killed.
I think if you, in terms of the drama of the story, it's incredibly effective. But I think it also does tell a real story about what it takes for people to behave in some ways in a heroic way. So in a way, it's a very depressing film, as you said, because it shows all the horror. But it shows the solidarity that people can have, the camaraderie, people willing to sacrifice their own lives effectively for a cause which they believe in, which they think is just, and for each other as well. So that's the funny thing about the Syrian story. I find it both sort of very depressing but also inspiring at the same time.
And Sama, the daughter of Wad and Hamza, she sort of serves as a beacon of hope, not just for us as an audience watching, but and obviously not just for her parents, but oddly also for everyone else who works with Hamza in the hospital.
Yeah, they keep her alive in some ways. I mean, it's interesting, they called her Sama, I think, which is Arabic for sky, which is sort of ironic in some ways because it's from the sky which the bombs are dropping. But it's also about the idea of, you know, the openness of the sky and the hope that they have for the future. You know, when we talked to her, she, I think there was, and in the film, there's a slight level of discomfort maybe when they, you know, to what extent were they using this child and putting her in a dangerous situation for the sake of themselves? And that's something that's explored in quite interesting way. I think that it's a great tribute to the people who didn't survive that siege. And also it humanizes the people who, when we hear about, you know, bombing here, or we see pictures of bombing in a sanitized fashion, it really makes us see what that actually means.
Samir, thank you. And up next, we'll be joined by Wad Al-Khatib, the filmmaker who created For Sama.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to The Prospect Podcast with me, Steve Bloomfield. Still with us here, Samir Rahim. And also, I'm very pleased to say we've been joined by Wad Al-Khatib, the producer, director, and the person in the film For Sama. Wad, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me here.
Can we start by going back to before 2011 and your life in Syria? Tell us a bit about yourself, what your life was like leading up to the moment the revolution began.
I'm from a family middle class, like good educational family, and we were living very normally as many of the Syrian people, which is you can't work in anything in public. Everything you need to be, it's just about yourself, your family. And if you were like trying to do anything out of this, you will be in very long and big troubles. One of the main memories that I have, that when I was 15, and you automatically will be part of Al-Ba'ath party, the main party that for the Assad regime family. And I've just refused to sign the paper directly. I wanted to sign it, but not now. And I wanted just to ask my parents about what does that mean and if I really want this, or I want to understand more about this. And since that time, I was like in the blacklist of the school because I refused this. So the life wasn't that easy, but at the same time, it was just like so easy in the way that you are just responsible of yourself.
So in 2011, when the protests broke out, did you immediately feel like this was an opportunity to change the country, to change Syria?
Like, we were waiting what will happen next in Syria, and that's directly after what happened in Tunisia and Libya and Egypt. We were thinking that, does that really, maybe that will happen in Syria? And we were not just waiting, we were really hunger of any change in our life. All the people who I know in my generation, we all have that plans to go out of Syria when we will be graduated from the university. And in 2011, it was the first time I feel that this is my country. I want to stay here. I want to do something in my country.
It's interesting, the sense of fear that you described with the Ba'ath Party and Assad regime, it seemed to disappear very quickly, and that people seemed incredibly confident. Certainly in the film, it seems that people were out protesting, chanting. There was a real sense of optimism that things could be done and peacefully as well.
Yeah, because all people were so terrifying of any change in our life. We knew that this regime is so like bloody regime. They will stop for nothing just to destroy the people. But at the same time, we felt that like the revolution could be something will never happen because of people fears. But suddenly, when the first people went into the street and then they were joined with more people with the time, we felt that no, this is reality and this is what happened. And this is not just like for now, or it should have been like happened maybe 20 years ago, and we are just like so late of this. And just like, you know, when you hear your voice out for the first time and you can't really believe that this is really happening. So it was just like something like we need it.
You were 18 at the time in 2011?
Yeah, I was 19.
19. And you decided to pick up a camera?
It wasn't a decision, actually. Like, yeah, I want to do this now. But when we started the protesting, we were thinking about every individual, how we can support the revolution. And filming was one of the main things that we knew as people that we needed. All the formal channels and everything in our media in Syria before and at the beginning of the revolution, it's all under the regime control, like 100%. You can't write a single word out of what they will tell you to write. So we knew that the media is something so important to let people understand inside and outside that there's a revolution in Syria. And part of that was like filming the protest in the street.
And what did you then do with that footage? Because, I mean, some of the footage that you filmed early on, when it became clear that the regime was going to do everything it could to crush the revolution, was brutal. What was the decision that you made to do with that footage?
Many people from my friends and people who were filming, we were sharing these videos on YouTube for normal channels and sometimes for international channels or local channels, Arabs or in the area around. But for me especially, like I couldn't really separate myself from being an activist and journalist at the same time. So I remember the first video, I showed it to my cousin who was like more professional than me. And I was showing him a very nice protest in the university. And I was like chanting while I'm filming and like jumping and whatever. And he was telling me like, no, this is not working at all. Like this video, you will keep it in your archive, but you can't publish it anywhere. And at that time, I realized that if I want to go in this way, I need to be more like calm. I want to be like more separate from the event itself. And I couldn't make it. So I've just kept filming in the way that I felt I want to be myself in this. And that's continue until the end of the siege, where you feel like most of this footage, it's more mixed between my personal story and the general story that was happening.
The siege itself in Aleppo must have been a terrifying experience. It certainly comes across like that. And the scenes, particularly in the hospital, where there's a lot of death and excruciating to watch, really, and must have been to experience. So did you have to make a decision when how graphic the film was going to be?
Yeah, exactly. Like we've worked through this film for 2 years, and one of the main discussions, everything about every scene in the film was about shall we like make people see this or not this, and that give me more understanding. When I worked with Edward, my fellow director on the film, we were discussing really every scene about like what we wanna show people. But the first thing that we were both agree was we need to not shelter people. We need people to understand what war means. We want to let people like seeing these images exactly as we've seen it. Of course, we didn't put everything we have, and what I've put in the film, it was maybe 10% of what the horror that I just personally have. And you can imagine how many other people has more other footage around Aleppo. And we've made one test screening before we finished the film, and it was too much for people to see. So we came back to the editing, and we did another step back of the footage that we've shown in the film, until we felt that this is the line when people can really watch and same time can understand exactly what war means.
In the Western media, often we have very sanitized news reports. We don't get to see much. I know in the Arab world, it's slightly different. There seems to be more, perhaps you could say, honesty about, you know, as you were saying, what war actually means. Do you think there's a difference between how Western audiences and, say, Syrian audiences would react to this?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And actually, this is in my personal perspective, this is why Western audience are so far from what's happening really on the ground in Syria. I understand that they can't maybe afford seeing this, but this is happening to human being around the world. And the fact that just like close your eyes and don't see this, that's not means that that will not happen. This is what's happening, and this is happening right now as we're speaking in Idlib, the last area out of the regime control. And we need people outside to understand that what war really means, what this price that people is really sacrificing their lives and people like children's lives. And just like felt that as the Syrian people faced this and went through this experience, it could have happened at any place around the world, in the UK, in the US, in any place. This is not just something so far. This could be here.
You mentioned what's happening in Idlib now. When the siege was taking place in Aleppo, it was headline news around the world, you know, partly because also of your reports that you were making for Channel 4 News. Do you feel now, looking on at what's happening in Idlib, that we have forgotten and that we have ignored what's the horror that's happening there?
Yeah, unfortunately, like all the news and the channels, like just going to a news if it's just a new. For them, Aleppo was a so famous city, and the siege was something not happened a lot before. So they feel that this is something really like exciting and new things. While now it's in Idlib the same thing, which happened 3 years ago. But unfortunately, like we can't understand how the world is like communicating with this issues. It's now happening, and all these people, like more than 3 million people, are besieged in this area, and there's nowhere for them to go to. So I feel that this film is so important because it's just bringing Syria news again to the news again in a way that people can understand what this life look like and how people really go through this experience and how what the details of this life. And maybe, like, I hope that will be a little bit of the change that we hope all to achieve.
Now, the Syrian government and the Russians who were bombing Aleppo, they were saying that they were bombing terrorist enclaves in Aleppo, and they were sort of reclaiming the city for the country. Obviously, you have a very different perspective on that. But what would you say to people who said, you know, the government was just trying to take control of its own country?
I don't have a different perspective. I have an evidence of that. I have this film. I have a normal life of not just my family, but other family. And you've seen in the film how people live through this experience and under these bad circumstances. You've seen this baby who was just born because of an attack happened. And this baby who was just like maybe 30 minutes from his life, he's being like trying to be survived. And this is can't be a tourist. It's all everything that Assad regime and the Russian trying to claim. It's all just like you can see in the film that this is something not what they trying to say.
And the direct targeting of hospitals is one of the most shocking things that you expose.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like if we want to just look back 3 years ago and just look back 3 months ago, it's more than 50 health facilities were targeted in Idlib and the countryside around. It's just their system and their way of dealing with people who's just opposed them.
How have your views changed of the West, whether that's America, Britain, Europe more generally, in terms of, before all this began, did you think that the West was potentially a force for good? Did you see countries like America as countries that could help people around the world? How have your views changed over the years?
Like we had thought that people around the world, when you come to principles like the democracy, the freedom, people will be all together for these principles. And we were really shocked that for us, we were thinking when we were inside Aleppo besieged and threatened to be killed at any moment, that that's just because we are so far from them. That's maybe because they don't know what was happening. But when I was like out and I've seen the people here, I've seen their own problem and their own struggle for keeping their democracy and their freedom. I felt that maybe we need to be more like not just thinking about how they couldn't do what they should have done before, but it's also about how we can be all together in this to help them more understand what war means. And the fact that the film and in the tour of the film, when we went to many places around the world, I was really shocked how people are really care about others. I thought that, and we've been told, not just I thought, when we were doing the film, we've been told that people around the world will not want to watch film, like any more films about Syria, any more films about refugee or about death. Like they are just want something more, like more funny, more joy and more happiness. And when we were like moving with the film, I felt like the reaction of the people around the world, it's all were really amazing. People were not just like move with the film, but also they were asking us at every screening, what can we do? And just the fact that they don't want just to watch, they want to make an action for this. I've seen many people who come to me with all like the tears in their eyes asking me like, sorry, how we did that happened to you. And I'm still have a lot of faith in people. Maybe I lost all my faith in the governments, but I'm still have faith that these people will not let this world going to the darkness as we've seen now.
And yet, you've seen governments ignore what's happening in Syria, and then you've seen governments treat people like yourself who've then sought refuge in the West, treated them as if, we frankly don't want you here. How does that make you feel?
I'm not thinking about this. I'm really like, we don't want to be here, actually. Like, we would love to be in Aleppo now. Like, keep fighting. Not just like, I'm not speaking about being there in a very comfortable way. We wanted to be in that battle. We didn't want to force to flee out. And this is maybe one point when we can start the conversation about Syria. Like, let the Assad go out of Syria, or let the Assad fall, and we will all, as refugees, will be back to our country. Like, no one of us dreamt to be a refugee when we will be like 18 or 20. We all wanted to be in our country doing like very well in the freedom that we wanted to fight for, to have it. And really, it could be something we can start the conversation with. And it's all about the fears. It's all about the dictatorship that they are trying to build, that fears through people's minds and make people be more close instead of being like more open, and more open to yourself, to the people around you, to the life. Just we need a lot of really hard work.
Speaking of leaving your country and being forced to, there's a moment in the film where you, your husband and Sama are able to leave Aleppo, but then you decide to come back, even though it's incredibly dangerous. And I think in the film you said that you didn't, you know, you weren't really sure why you did it, but I wonder if you reflected, since then, and why did you return? What was it that motivated you to go back into such a dangerous situation?
We've been in this situation in Aleppo for 5 years, since 2011 when the revolution started. And we knew that this journey will be so long, and it will like take a lot of effort and a lot of like people who've been killed, people in the prisons, and a lot of really hard work to achieve the freedom that we all dream of. But we didn't thought that one day it will be like the choice that it's even your safety with your child, or like your freedom, or you're fighting for your freedom. And at that moment, we felt that like we can't just let people behind and go and think about our own safety, and we can't be selfish as that in that situation. And as Hamza, as a doctor, he has a very big role in the hospital to achieve and to do and to help people, to treat people, and even to give people some hope and some like feeling that there's someone here for us. And for me, as a citizen journalist, as a person who have a great relationship with channels outside, I felt that I could have really made a difference in the media situation in Aleppo. And just like think about Salem and Afra, the other family who's also in the film, and we can't just like leave them with their kids inside and just think about our own safety.
There are so many wonderful moments in the film, but one of them that really stayed with me was their son, when you were talking to him and about his friends who've left, and how he'd drawn little pictures of all of them. And you asked him, you know, what he would say to him if he could. He said, "I would, I'd ask God to forgive them for leaving me here." There was this real sense of, you know, no one wanted to go, did they?
Yeah. It was like you've seen him before, 1 year before this, when we knew that maybe the siege will happen and maybe we will leave all, and he was just like crying that I don't want to leave. He was like, you feel him, like he's full of like fears and he's so scary. But at the same time, like he's just thinking about, I don't want to leave Aleppo. And it's really like all so complicated really to explain.
How are you all, yourself, Hamza and your children, how are you all coping with being here in the UK? What is your life like now?
Like there's a feeling of... a little bit we are okay because we were forced to flee. We didn't left people behind when we left. And the other things about the film itself, that being in this process for 2 years, trying to just make the film as perfect as we can, and then now going in the tour about, around with the film to speak about Syria again and what happened, and speak about what's going on right now in Idlib. It's all give us like some of reason why we are here and what we are trying to achieve. We're trying, and on the other hand, to start adopt with a new life and just feeling that I need to do this for my kids now, to being like grow up in a safe place with the life that they really deserve it. So I'm trying just to like think in the positive way of why we are here.
I'm going to ask you an impossible question. If in 2011 you knew what would happen and the attacks the government would rain down on you, would you still do the same thing?
Exactly, yes. This is so easy for me to answer this question, and I say it in the film, and I wanted to really say it in very direct way in the film that I will never regret anything happened. And I think not just me, but many other Syrians feel that we were late.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Wad Al-Khatib, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That's all for this week's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Wad Al-Khatib's film For Summer is out now in cinemas nationwide, and it will be on Channel 4 as well at the end of October. Rebecca Liu was this week's producer. If you enjoyed the Prospect podcast, please do leave us a rating and a review. It really does help other listeners find us. We'll see you next week. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.